welcome to Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul and this standalone interview edition. Today's interview is with Barbara Eve Harris, who played Agent Felicia Lang in season 2 and 3 of Prison Break. Tune in to our interview coming up right now.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
So welcome back. Quick bio on our guest today. Welcome to Barbara Eve Harris. And I'm going to start our intro with what we all have
thank
in common.
Thank you.
We were obviously all in Prison Break together. After that, Barbara appeared on Private Practice, which was Paul's next show. Mm-hmm. And then Barbara and I did a pilot together for the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company, where I played a spy and she played my incredibly well-dressed boss. I still remember the suit and the vest and the tie that you had. It was so amazing. The pilot was called Tangled. It was not picked up. That was probably for the best. Barbara and I also have in common that we are immigrants to Canada. Since I saw you last, Barbara, I have completed my immigration and am now a dual citizen. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
And of course, beyond that, Barbara has appeared in like dozens and dozens of film and TV, including a really acclaimed Canadian independent film called The Body Remembers When the World Broke Open. Transformers The Last Night, which was not an independent film, and The Amazing Spider-Man, also acclaimed. On the TV side, you might know her from her life in the Chicago Med/Fire/PD universe, or Messiah, or Sharp Objects. So that is my introduction. How much of that did I get right?
Objects.
Okay, good.
No That's lies.
Well, I don't have time.
Terribly,
for, like,
terribly incomplete.
The, like, well, we can't do all of it.
I also know you were nominated for Gemini Awards.
I'm joking.
And all kinds of things
I'm joking.
For your work, on both sides of the border.
And also, we just read that you're
spit it out, Paul.
President-elect Trump's nominee for Surgeon General. Is that true? That's on Wikipedia. Is that not?
They hadn't let me know, but
congratulations.
Thank you for your service. Now, are you based?
Step
what side of the border are you based
best
on?
I can.
Are you on the Canada side? You're in LA. Okay.
Here I'm in LA. Okay. I've been in LA.
I'm coming to you live from BC.
Okay. 25 years now.
I'm coming to you live from BC. Paul's
so I go back to Canada. Sorry.
That's great.
Oh, you told me how much you loved.
Well,
but
you're from Toronto, right? That's where you grew up.
I was touched.
Oh, in Ottawa.
No, I was born in the West Indies, grew up in Ottawa, Ottawa, which is not well, yeah, Toronto's not, you know, a cakewalk either in the winter, but Ottawa
you don't say.
Is certainly not the center of
fair,
the universe.
Fair enough.
Nevertheless, I navigated my beginnings from there.
So, so how did you get from Ottawa to LA to the career that you've had? I mean,
My initial intention was to be a lawyer, and I got my offers of audition to scholarship and admission to law school, and I let them expire because I realized during the course of my university years that my heart really lay in theater and not in law. And it was really, you know, for my parents and status and whatever. So I just listened to my heart instead, let everything expire. My mother cried and my father wouldn't speak to me for months, literally. And so I just went to New York and sort of found my way around, compared myself or just saw where I stood, et cetera, et cetera. Long story short is that dancing in New York got me into my first movie in Montreal, and then that got me back into acting. So I was in Canada doing my thing for several years, and then felt like I needed to expand a little bit. Came down to LA with the help of all the, you know, producers and directors that I'd worked with in Toronto mostly. who were from LA mostly, and said, you need to come down. So,
and at what point did your parents kind of go, okay. Yeah.
Or have they?
Oh, long ago. I mean, guided to the
That'll
local papers in Ottawa, and they were great.
I have an oddly similar journey.
Was it like the Tribune, or was it like Evanston Daily Press?
It was the Tribune and Steppenwolf helped, sure. And then a little TV, then that's the TV, yeah.
And they accepted it?
Slow burn. I don't think it was as extreme. It wasn't maybe... It was as extreme as yours, but they were...
Oh, I wouldn't call it extreme. I have to say my mother was always very, sympathetic. She cried because she was worried about
me. That's what I got. Disappointed.
But then she became the biggest cheerleader. Oh, my gosh. She was like personal PR. Very proud. And
good.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Prison Break.
Prison Break.
Was this something you auditioned for? So we were already a hit show. Is this something you auditioned for? Did they come to you?
I remember your question to Sarah. Yeah, yes, right. I auditioned for it. Yeah. I did audition for it. The thing is, though, I knew about the show because the UPM was a friend of mine, and he told me he was excited about the show he was on. The title, I'd heard you guys talk about this. The title did not appeal to me.
Yeah.
Why would I want to watch a show called Prison Break? And a bunch of guys in prison want to break out. As soon as the opening credits came on, I was just enthralled.
Cool.
And I knew that this was special for the pilot. Yeah. And then the first episode was magnificent. I thought, well, that's great. But how can they keep that up for a whole season? And then...
Yeah,
kept it up for a whole season. The character development was mostly what it was, and the storyline, the plots, the writing, everything, performances. Okay, so now they get out, so it's over. And then, so I was locked in and loving the show, but then I found out that they need help hunting them down in season two. So, yes, I was sent to audition. The sides I was given were Mahone's character's sides.
Right.
I was beyond excited. Right. I thought, this is so meaty, so badass. Oh, my God. I'm going to just eat this up. And I did. The audition went very, very well. Matt was there. They loved it. I thought, oh, my gosh, this was, like, so easy. And I got this role that I'm going to just devour. then I got the first.
I wonder what William Fichtner's doing on this show.
That's an interesting bait and switch.
We've all been there, Barbara. We've all been there.
No. Well, I mean, they explained that they just needed to see, because they knew that the first episode didn't have enough stuff to show what they needed to see for later on. So they just gave me stuff that needed to was going to show it. So anyway, my character, as I saw in the first episode that I got, I was a little confused, still not clear. And she was a little more green than I expected I was going to be playing. And I don't know, what is this? Mm-hmm. So I asked... Kevin Hooks was there on set or at the location when I went to Dallas. I asked him about it, and he said, let me know. Let me see. And he called up somebody in L.A., and he said, having a long conversation with questions about my character, and I thought, I didn't mean for you to be doing all this. I just wanted to know, who is she?
And probably got them thinking about
but
it.
That was very generous
of him,
too,
actually.
And
yeah.
Who knows? But I was given three episodes. I was hired for one, but given three episodes right away at the first thing. And then I knew I was on a great, great show. And I was so grateful and excited. And I loved going to Texas because I probably wouldn't have gotten there otherwise. And then I don't know if I should say this. I'm going to. I was still a little bit thinking my role. I just thought, I'm not doing as much as I thought I was going to be doing based on Mahone's. So I sent a little note. When I did the audition, I did my thing, and then I was leaving. I said, would you like to see my demo?
Why would we want to know what you're
said,
capable
no,
of?
No. So
why would we want to know what you're capable of?
That was good. What's that? Yeah. Oh, no. No, I thought they were, thought it meant they were happy. They were already convinced. They didn't need any more. So that's the way I took it. But then after three episodes, I think, I sent Matt my demo reel. I said, I know you said you didn't want to see it, but would you look at it? And then the next thing I saw, the next episode that I saw written was like a feature and lots of fascinating action, badass stuff. And I thought, oh, okay, thank you. Yeah. So, that was written by
First of all, that's a great
that episode.
Like, it's interesting the way often, I mean, Paul and I have talked about this a lot, that you sometimes end up advocating yourself, advocating for yourself, even sort of unintentionally, by asking questions that kept people thinking. So if that's the case, then she wasn't designed as a sort of future love interest for Mahone. I mean, do you have a sense of when that evolved? Like, when was the first time that you were kind of like,
You know what? Interesting question. The very first episode, the very first scene with Mahone was me being introduced to him, and he asked me a question, like to test me, I guess, to see, you know, what I knew. I gave him a short answer, which I thought was making me look bright, and, you know, he'd be impressed. And then he turns around, we're standing and walking and talking, and then he turns around and he starts blah, 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 lying to me, showing me how there was so much more to the answer than what I thought I knew. And so I saw that in the script, and I thought, I'm going to be standing here. This is my first appearance. Am I standing here with my whatever in my hand, watching him while he talks and talks and talks to me? What am I going to be doing? And there are lots of ways to maybe come up with things that I didn't really know until we did the first rehearsal, and he turned around and started talking to me, and I looked at him, and I was just literally mesmerized. I was in awe, partly by Bill and partly by the character, but so Lang and Barbara were just in awe. And sure, I'm trying to take in what you're saying, but you are just the most amazing. And so that was picked up.
What
and
a great when lesson. We finished this, keep going.
When we finished the scene, Bill said to me, you know what? I think we can do some good stuff together down the line. And my agents sort of acknowledged the chemistry that they saw, and I felt it too. Yeah. So I was in love with him. Barbara was in love with Bill in a professional way, but Lang was just really smitten by Mahone from that first introduction, when I thought I was just going to prove to this new boss that I was on top of things, and I was just disarmed.
What a great acting lesson. It's like you don't know what it's going to be until you're standing there receiving the truth and giving the truth back, you know, and then everything gets informed by that. It's such a great – and then, you know what, one of the wonderful things about episodic TV, when they didn't used to write it all at the same time and sometimes they don't, is that the writers, producers, directors get to see what they have and then say – oh, there's a vibe there. Well, not necessarily romantic, but maybe, you know, maybe romantic. And saying, oh, let's write more for them. Or that really popped, right? I really like seeing these two together. Let's dig into it. It's such a fun thing to, it's such an exciting thing when it happens too. And it's, again, such a good acting lesson.
Thank you, Well, I would say just about every time I worked with Bill, it was an acting lesson. In the same way, because I would look at the script and I wouldn't have to even worry about what the heck I'm going to do. Make sure I know my lines, make sure I show up, and the thing will come alive. And I give him credit for that. Everything would just come alive and just
well,
be
because
with
there,
it.
There's scenes that are full of traps.
Like,
do you know what I mean? Like, there's a version of this show with lesser actors where those scenes come on and you're like, just get back to the Prison Break, you guys. Like, get back to the Fox River 8. But the scenes became... We were just talking about this as we rewatched it. Those scenes become every bit as sort of riveting because of the choices that were made. And it was fantastic casting. And it was kind of neat, too, because I think as a viewer, I mean, we were essentially on different shows. We almost never worked together. It was a show that was more or less allergic to passing the Bechdel test. I would watch the episodes when they aired, and I was like, whoa, what are they doing?
like you started to see something come together that then had a tail that went all the way through to the end. And that, I don't know, I just think that's, it was really beautiful to watch.
So you are one of those actors who watches the show. Many don't. Bill never did.
I don't anymore.
I watch.
I don't anymore.
I like to
then
watch.
I was so was that? Green that I learned from the distance between what I thought I was doing and what I was actually doing. So I would go home and the scene would be in my head because I thought I understood what I was doing. And then I'd watch it and I'd be like, oh, I buried that way too deep. Nope, that didn't come out at all. Or like, yeah, a little bit of that goes a long way. Like I was very much calibrating. Mm-hmm. And also because I was in so little of the show, especially for the first kind of year and a half, you know, I'd be 3 or 4 scenes an episode, but there was so much going on with these colleagues that I would get to know on set and in the makeup trailer and stuff. And I was like, I want to know what Amaudi's up to. Like, what's Barbara doing? Like, how, Lane, how's your show going? Haven't seen you in 6 weeks. And so watching the show was a part of kind of catching up with all of that. How was Texas for you, by the way?
Oh, like, I see.
If it was a new place for all of us, mostly except for Lane. Yeah. It's all right.
Yes.
Did you hear that sound?
I don't worry about it.
I don't know what it was, so we don't mind.
Yes. Okay. All right. That's right. Texas. Yes. Well, I was very excited to go because it's such a big part of the American, you know, sort of picture, and I never would have gotten there otherwise, likely. So I was excited. I'm going to go to part of America I probably wouldn't have seen. And my experience of Dallas was, you know, just this little bubble, the prison break bubble. I met some people there and, you know, had some nice social interactions, but it was mostly kind of location experience of being surrounded by or in the environment of the production. I really enjoyed it. Some great restaurants and museums and whatever, but I didn't really plug in otherwise. The locals that I met were very, very nice and gracious, so I only had good experiences. When I first got there, that very, very first night,
oh,
it
boy.
Was summer, and I got there in the evening, so I went to check to my hotel, decided to go outside, middle of the night. I thought, someone had made a mistake. The oven was left on 100%. In the sky.
100%.
What the hell? Oh my God.
So I've never felt that before either.
That kind of heat.
How did you find, it's always tricky to go into a dynamic that's already existed for a while before you get there. You know, it was a show that it had already done 22, 23 episodes before you arrived. Everybody kind of had their groove. Did you find it easy to fit in or catch the same, I don't know what the word would be, wavelength as everyone else?
Well, I was a huge fan of the show, so I went in very grateful and excited. And the energy that I received was just really lovely. And my character was new, a stranger to this environment as well, so everything worked in tandem. Everything reflected everything else, so it fit. It was perfectly normal.
And
how
Billy
I
was
felt
new to the show too, so in some ways,
feeling.
It's kind of cool. You're not sort of stepping on a moving carousel.
That's,
you know, you're
that's
sort of
point.
Starting
that's
this thing
point.
Together.
Yeah, he'd been there for a few. I think I started
so.
Episode 3 or something. Three or four. So he'd been there already. Plus, he just established himself. I went in seeing him as part of the establishment because he was so. I mean, he was my lead for my storylines. He was my lead, and
Billy takes up space on a set.
It was his room
in like a super good way. But like he just played my dad, but like he shows up and he's just like
he owns it.
Like Billy's here, and you're like, oh, Billy's here. Let's all tune into that. Like it's impressive. It's really cool.
Yes, yes, yeah. It really is. Yeah. So, you know, that part was easy. I like people, and they were good people, and the material was great. And then, of course, the work the work sort of and did vibe it, and energy like, was great.
Once it started airing and you're on the show,
yeah.
like, did things shift for you at all? Were things different personally or professionally? Or were there, like, you know, long-lost family being like, oh, my God, I saw you on TV. Like, was there a thing like that? Or at that point, I mean, because you'd been working for a long time. Like, you were a really established actor. This wasn't a new thing for you.
Yeah, I had been acting for a long time. But this was definitely a huge, huge bump professionally, career-wise, visibility-wise, in every way. It was like the biggest sort of had the biggest impact on my career, even up to now. Because this is what, 16? Well, I started in 2006, right? So
next fall is the 20th anniversary of the show starting. So it would have been about 18 years ago for you at this point.
Yeah. Did you know that it was number one on Netflix for six weeks in a row in terms of numbers?
Yeah.
That's yeah,
crazy.
So yeah, to this day, people come. I mean, every country of origin, you know, Asian, African, European, come up to me telling me about how much they love the show, seen it, all seasons four or five times over. It's crazy. Been a big part of people's lives, and so yeah, that's been a big thing for me. And then, of course, a lot of things came out of it. Having worked on that show, I worked with Matt quite a bit since.
Oh, because he did all the Chicago.
Nice. Yeah.
Right? Chicago Met and Fire and stuff. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
Mm-hmm. And FBI International. That was
nice. Never hired me back.
Surprise.
Well done.
Want to go to Budapest?
Who doesn't want to go to Budapest?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
With Craig Turk, who was also a private practice guy.
Oh, nice.
Wrote on both of those. Yeah.
I didn't work with you on Private Practice either. We were just like saying hello and reminiscing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
We had lots of scenes together in Tangled. You were one of the highlights of Tangled. We had so much fun.
Sarah. It was supposed to get picked up. I mean, I think things work out the way they're supposed to, but it was supposed to have gotten picked up. I don't know why. But you're right about the costume.
Oh, my God. We had the greatest costumer. She was just like, let's do a spy show where you guys all look amazing all the time. We were like, okay.
Sounds good to me.
The suits she had for you with the ties and the vests.
You know, what we do is just magical. Mm-hmm. What we do is magical because no matter what's going on, I've been working where my feet are so sore from the shoes, they're bleeding, and I'm limping to my mark, action, and then I'm walking and strutting like nobody's business.
Yeah.
Cut. I'm in pain again, limping back to my or if it's super cold and you got a bare midriff and you're shivering, and then action, everything's fine, and then cut. Get me my warm up. It's what we do, it literally is magic. But weren't you a producer on that?
I was. It was the first thing I ever produced.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wild. And it was a really, I mean, it's a long conversation for another time. I learned so much on that. And, you know, likewise, I'd heard it was going to be picked up. And there were so many things I was excited to explore. And, like, such great actors, Conrad Plaw and all these wonderful people. And then the day I heard that we weren't getting picked up in the same breath. I was shooting a movie in Nigeria. My agents were like, and there's this thing called The Walking Dead that's a zombie thing they want you to audition for. And I was like, I have 2 hours of electricity a day. If it's still alive when I get back, we can talk about it. But it was in the same breath. Like, Tangled isn't getting picked up, and there's this thing called The Walking Dead. And I was like, And I think you're right. Sometimes, like, life just kind of clears a path and goes, no, you're going to take a right-hand turn no matter how much you think you should go left right now. And that's, you know,
well, that's very interesting. I forgot that they were so closely tied. But it was, you know, we didn't work a whole lot in Prison Break, but I watched the shows. And your strength was just in Prison Break. It was a kind of your character was more. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, except by contrast, the kind of strength that your character in Tangled, although I think it was mostly you being producer and actor, and then in Walking Dead, just had me floored because I thought this pretty face and this slim little body had such ferocious vital force coming out of her. How does that happen? And she doesn't look like she's trying. It's just like she is that. Yeah, a little bit of that came out when you were had your producer hat on in between takes, and I thought, oh my God, this woman is fierce.
Oh man, that's funny. Yeah, there was the kind of strength that was Sarah's strength on Prison Break was one that I liked, and one that when I was done, I was like, now I want to try something else. I don't want to get stuck in this place. Yeah, it's a funny thing. Okay, wait. I want to take a quick break because I asked fans to send some questions in for you.
Yes,
and I
want
to, if you're game.
No, I don't want to. Let's not do that.
All right. Well, good seeing you.
Okay.
That's that good old no but rule of acting. Yeah. Would you? No. But. Okay. So just for the folks listening, we will be back after this with questions for Barbara Eve Harris.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Okay, we're back.
All right.
All right, we got some fan questions.
I'm curious about what people are curious about.
So there's a couple. One from at X Katie Hughes and another one from at a.life with 4 E's that has to do with the preparation. So the question is like, are there things you did to get prepared for the role / get into character? And then the second one of these is, did you do any research into real life detectives? Was there a prep thing like that? And maybe the question has to do even with like, how do you prep in your trailer before you do a scene? I don't know. You can answer that however. However you want.
This sounds like one of those questions that are meant to be helpful to the person who's listening.
I don't know how much
help I'm going to be. Because my way is not necessarily the ideal way, and it's changed so much over the years.
Just do like 4 lines of Coke and some tequila and roll out there.
Yeah. I know that's some of people's ways.
That's just standard.
Yes, in the beginning I had a more structured technique and preparation approach, and it was kind of extensive. And then it sort of tapered down over the years, and by the time I did Prison Break, I'd done a bunch of detective stuff. I'd switched over from nice, professional, you know, warm person to authority, you know, badass, kick-ass, just overnight from a movie that I did in the 90s. So after that, there was a lot of the authority stuff.
Wait, which
and detective
movie?
Stuff. Oh, it was called Dead Man Can't Dance. And I played a drill sergeant,
amazing.
An Army Ranger drill sergeant.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, are these people crazy?
No,
and
not
everybody
at all.
Left, except my then husband.
He said, oh, no, they got it right.
But, yes, I didn't understand what the heck, because I don't do that, and it didn't feel like me. And even on we shot in the Philippines, and my colleagues after within the first week of rehearsal and preparation, they said, I don't know, you better be a damn good actress, because I don't see this.
Interesting.
Because it wasn't who I saw myself as, right. But on the day, I don't know, it just kind of took over the. I guess it was kind of like being choreographer, just as a choreographer, being in charge and knowing that it's for everyone's good, but you really want the outcome to be good.
What
so you
got
to be as hard as you have to be for the better.
What a great metaphor.
Yeah. And I was, you know, as a drill sergeant, putting them through drill. So it was literally wanting them to be in the right formation as well. But being hard on them to get the best out of them, and so it felt natural, and then after that, I just kept getting all these offers for roles of bosses and badasses.
And can I just, we love when we have actors on, because we can just go down an actor rabbit hole forever. But for somebody who did ask that question and is curious as to, well, how much research did you do as a drill sergeant? How much research did you do as a detective? How much research? It's like you find that crossover point, right? Like, well, I have to be a drill sergeant. I can draw on what I did as a choreographer. It's the same vibe. It's like, and then you bring that vibe to it, and that's what makes it yours.
Yes.
That's such a good lesson of you bring yourself to the thing, and that's how you experienced being in a position of authority. And so, and that's what playing make-believe is all about.
That's a great answer,
so
Paul.
Well, you said it.
No,
you said it. I'm just expounding on it.
I didn't realize how I was answering it because until you made it clear. But that's true. Now, some people do the, like, the research thing, the ride-along thing, the, you know,
sure.
watching material, video stuff. I rely on writing, on really good writing, if it's there, and then my own life experience. And then if it's something technical that I really need to understand that's out of my range of, you know, experience, maybe, but generally I don't have to spend weeks and months. But then again, I haven't done the kind of character that
requires
Like a, you know, biography of someone big, important in living.
Also, a good lesson is that you only need to, that you only do the work that's required. I think some people feel like more work means it's better. And it's you can overdo it. Just like you said, because you showed up on set open. I think if you do too much work, you burden yourself from being
You're
open.
Doing your homework. You're playing your homework, not the moment.
You bring it, right. And you got to do your work at work, as a director once told me. Do your work at work.
That's part of what I was saying about my evolution of my process. And now, initially, the process was a formal structure of preparation and analyzing and notes and exploring and all that stuff. And really, now my exercise and my preparation is the openness, being knowing my material, but showing up ready to receive what comes to me from the other actors and just from, you know, up there, wherever the stuff comes from. Being an open vessel, that's my preparation now.
Where do you think it comes from? I'm curious. Well, sorry, we'll get to another fan question. No, I mean, you definitely don't have to answer that, but I think there's...
I don't know. That's my answer.
Okay.
It's like, what is God? I don't know.
Sure.
And if someone tries to define that for me, I don't think you know either, but thank you for your attempt at, you know, narrowing it down. They're just things that are beyond our understanding, things that go on, like the magic that I talk about.
Yeah.
Why is it that I'm shivering to death and I feel like this is the most painful thing ever, and the camera rolls and nothing is wrong except what's wrong for the character, unless the character's supposed to be called it.
Right.
You know, it's magic, and that's all.
Yeah.
That's all. Sorry.
I remember
agreed.
Doing some theater work. I remember somebody telling me, I did a play with a guy who had a fever, and it was theater, and his understudy was radically miscast. Do you know what I mean? Like, we were students, and so he was like in his 50s, and the understudy was like 25, and he's like, he can't go on. And he had a 103-degree fever.
Oof.
Except when he was on stage. And we would feel him come off, and he'd be okay. And within 5 minutes, he'd be doubled over in the green room, like sweating, nauseous, so sick. And they'd be like, okay, man, it's, you know, like, you're up. He'd be like, and you could see, like, I don't understand the physiology, but it would recede. And I would watch him walk on stage, and I was like, he doesn't have a fever right now.
Right. And that's, people say, oh, it's adrenaline, it's the reduction of cortisol, and you can reduce it to all that, but there's something magical going on there. That is, you are communing with something greater, and that's why we love it so much.
That's why you do it, right? I mean, like,
that's why you do it. I mean, I was talking to a visual artist over Thanksgiving, and we were trying to find that point. I was like, you know, what is the thing? You do it alone, you do it in a studio, it's a visual art, it's such a different thing than performing. And he says, you know, there's that moment where time is gone and you're conscious and unconscious all at the same time and something larger is flowing through you and you're seeing something you've never seen before, but it's coming out of you, but you don't know where it came from. And I was like, yep, that's the same
thing. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the same thing.
And trying to understand it and define it, I think it's a waste because I think it's right. beyond us, but we have access to it. We trust
tried
it.
For so long.
Yeah.
Because I think, well, I might just have to cut this out. But I think when you have an initial impulse towards it, it's all magic. Mm-hmm. And then you go, okay, how did I do that? Because I want to be a professional and I want this to be repeatable and I want to.
Yes.
Right. And I want to make sure I can do it again. And then I just go whoop all the way into my head for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And then and then you sure. do all this work in a way to get back to that thing, because it does have to be repeatable. And you do see, especially with young stars, people who've gotten very big and they don't know how they do what they do mm-hmm. and they become crazy monsters mm-hmm. because they don't know.
Well,
and they're
scared. If you don't have a technique backup for when the Correct. Magic isn't in the room, because the magic sometimes isn't in the room. Like
Right, but even as Barbara was saying, the technique to make yourself the open vessel to allow yourself to be 100%. That thing, that's a technique too, right? You have to exercise the muscle of being present, right? I mean, all those things. And that's where the Coke and the tequila comes in.
Oh, now I see.
Now I see why.
Okay, we have another question. Can I ask another
yes,
question
please.
Here?
We could have been 2 hours on this one.
I know.
We could really make this an acting podcast. Nobody would maybe listen, but we certainly
There'd
would.
There'd be six kids in grad school somewhere who halfway through go, I don't think this is good advice.
At Cherie Knights, CHERIENIGHTSS, asks, what was your experience stepping into a mostly male cast environment?
Remembering that it was 2006 or 2007, and so they were almost all mostly male cast environments back then.
I guess. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, how about I'll add to yet another mostly male cast environment?
I liked it.
It was a macho show.
There
was something macho about the show itself.
Even the extras, they'd be lined up and. Because the set would be like left for the main actors until they're ready for that. They'd be lined up. I'd be walking by them saying good morning and just loving that wall of testosterone as I walked into the studio. And then I like men a lot. I like their energy. And so it's like was not a – it was nice. It was nice.
We have to wrap it up because,
we do?
Sarah.
We do.
I want to say –
Fine,
I'm sorry. And Paul, you're absolutely a gentleman and a sweetheart, and my encounters with you were wonderful, although much briefer. I got to tell you, Sarah, even though I didn't work with you a whole lot, I saw you a fair bit on set. Mm-hmm. And I'm still to this day so amazed at how, not amazed, well, grateful and touched at how sweet and generous and gracious you were to me. There were times when you were walking up towards me and looking so happy to see me, and I think, what? Who's who, me? Is she?
How is she so happy about?
Yeah. Oh my God, you were just so lovely. And then
I was always so happy to see you.
Oh Lord. Anyway, it was a nice experience.
Well, hopefully we'll get to do an even three before our careers round out. And there's something up ahead for us because it would be super wonderful.
I'd love that.
And I will say, I'm grateful to hear you say that you loved that male energy. I struggled with it sometimes. We've talked about this a little bit. I was always happy to see you, partly because you are who you are and you're somebody who really carries light and positivity. You were also another woman. There wasn't a lot of that going around. And so that combination always really was lovely. But I've discovered that part of doing this, of sitting together with, a close friend that I trust and looking over something that was so monumental in both of our lives, is that you can almost start to tell yourself different stories about it. And there's a little bit of like a healing and a reclaiming. When I talk to somebody who had such a positive experience and foregrounds that so much, like, I'm grateful for that so many levels. Because I think I was talking to somebody about this just the other day, and without getting into a whole like ontological spiritual thing, I think at a certain point we make choices about victimhood or strength, and about remembering pain or choosing healing. And I didn't realize until we were halfway wherever we are in this season, that that's part of what I'm doing here.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I'm looking back at a show that was wonderful and complicated and painful and going, I'm going to heal this because I want to love this as purely and as holy as the fans who come up. Because, dude, I just got back from Europe for 2.5 weeks. I was telling Paul before you got on, I have never been recognized more in my life. Not peak Walking Dead, not when the show was on. And it's wild because it's Prison Break and it's that it's back on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I see the joy that it brings to folks.
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah, man, what a beautiful thing. What a beautiful thing. So anyway, thank you for being one of the hands to hold to move towards that like full positivity, because that's really beautiful.
That's a great thing that you said. It's about stories that we tell ourselves. I mean, the reality is what it is. Our experience of it is moldable, changeable by us. And we want to be happy. We want to be fulfilled. We want to feel good. We decide to do that.
Amen.
Amen.
Okay,
thank
before
you so
we let
much
you go,
for being with
we have
us.
One wrap-up question.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That we ask question. Every guest this season. Paul, do you want to hit her with the wrap-up question?
Which is season-specific. Last season it was... what was it last season?
It was your last meal.
Last meal. This season it is, if you had to go on... If the authorities were after you, if they're finally closing in, and you had to disappear to some place...
This is fake. It's okay. Don't get stressed.
They're not. As far as we know.
They're not coming.
This is fake stress, okay?
This is fake. Okay, good.
Where would you go to disappear and start your new life?
To disappear and start my new life. And this has to be quick, so I will just say... Kauai.
Oh, good one.
Beautiful, small, unbothered island.
Mm-hmm.
How's that? I don't know.
That's a great answer. Sarah froze, but she is also a native Hawaiian.
Oh,
I was born and raised.
Yeah, I didn't realize.
But she froze, so I think I will just take the reins here and wrap up because she may be...
Maybe I sent her back somewhere in
gone,
time.
Gone, or she's... Look at that look on her face.
Yeah.
It's an amazing food. It's
very flattering.
Barbara, it was so good to see you.
Oh,
thank you for
delight.
Everything.
Thank you, Paul.
All right.
Thank you, Sarah.
I hope to see you soon.
Okay,
right.
Take care. All the best.
Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is a Caliber Studio production. Your hosts have been inmates Sarah Wynne Callis and Paul Edelstein. Our prison warden's producer, Ben Haber. The frontman of our jailhouse rock band is Paul Edelstein, who made all the music. Our prison yard tattoo artist, logo, and brand designer is John Nunziato and Little Big Brands. Check them out at littlebigbrands.com. Follow us on Instagram and YouTube at Prison Break Podcast. Email us at pbpodcast@caliber-studio.com. And call us at 401-3-P-BREAK. Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul has been a Caliber Studio production. Thank you for listening.